Session number 11736, Stephen Pete, Reel 4.
Reel 4.
In about a matter of minutes. I was visited... I'm just trying to remember. There was a nurse on the ship who, by chance, was an Australian Quaker. It was an Australian hospital ship, that's right. And one of the officers had been to a Quaker school. I can't remember either of these people's names, but nevertheless, they knew me. And when I told one of the ship's officers, or learnt where we were going, because I didn't think we were told in advance, to Haifa, I said that my brother was there. This was a really strange chance, in the Palestine police, as he was at that time, for reasons of his own. And so when we docked at Haifa, there was my brother suddenly on board. So that was a strange chance, and I was put in a hospital ward somewhere near Haifa, and when I recovered from the fever and was sent away with a rail voucher to get back to Cairo, I spent a few days having a bit of extra recovery at their house on Mount Carmel and meeting his wife, who I hadn't met. They'd just got married. And then went off back to Cairo by train, which was quite an experience, to find that the large group of us who had come out from England, plus one or two FAU who were already there, were going to be on the staff of a thing called the Number 1 Mobile Military Hospital, an army military hospital, to be on duty for the army for whatever was about to happen, which was Montgomery's push right across Africa, it turned out. So, from autumn 1942 to summer of 43, we were working with this hospital as drivers and ward orderlies, and went to nearly to Tunis and back. And there were a few ambulances, there was one or two staff cars, and a lot of three-ton trucks, and I was a driver of one of the three-ton trucks, which carried, I think it was a 20-bed ward with all the beds and the tented ward and all the supplies for the ward. And that was the next... nearly a year, 8 or 9 months work in North Africa. I remember we can't have gone right away. We must have been training and preparing either in Alexandria or Cairo. I think it's Alexandria. Because I remember one day driving one of these trucks by myself. I was alone with it. I suppose I'd been delivering some things, and being flagged down by a couple of soldiers, English soldiers, who, when I stopped, they stopped me because they saw the Red Cross on the front, said, we've just knocked over this Arab. I think we've broken his leg, they said, picking up his leg and waving it around, which was rather alarming anyway, because I was there and I had a stretcher, or some stretchers on board, because we put him on the truck, and I had a difficult time finding somewhere to take him, because I took him to the first hospital I came to, and he wasn't allowed because he was Arab, and I got more and more angry going around trying to find somewhere where I could get help for this poor chap with a broken femur, I think it was. It was an awful state. It was, apart from that short time in South Africa on the way out, it was my next introduction to rather vicious racial prejudices or regulations. So when the attack, or soon after the attack started, we were moving forward for the first to the first place that we stopped at. I don't remember where it was. It was nowhere particular, no town, and set up shop with the whole hospital for the first time, taking in wounded from the various battles as they took place right across North Africa. This hospital, unlike, and had a very special thing, it had women nurses, a small group, I don't know how many, a dozen perhaps, and a matron who was a real tyrant, looking after her nurses. She was pretty scared, I think, having women nurses up there amongst all these army people. For a short period, I think various of us were assigned to be their kind of orderly, serving their meals and things. It fell to my lot at one time, and I didn't get on well with that matron. It seemed absurd. Out in the middle of nowhere, they'd managed to commandeer some bits of furniture and sideboards and things to have. And with the sand blowing all the time, I used to get upbraided for not keeping this thing polished and free from dust. Anyway, that's just by the by. That was a small awkwardness of living there. Most of the work was pretty hard, because when we were at work with the operating theatre, and I think it was three trucks backed against each other, and they had an operating theatre with generator. Most of the wards, of all the wards, were tents, you see, great big tents. And worked in different jobs according to what needed to be done. Allocated the various wards as ward orderly. I remember one period, my job was emptying the 44-gallon drums of rubbish from each ward into a huge pit that had been dug, in order to get rid of it, and to get rid of it and preventing any flies coming and spreading infection around, because in these great drums of muck out of the wards would be suppurating bandages and mouldy loaves of bread and goodness knows what. So that, when I found that rather difficult, because on one particular occasion, two of us were doing this and backing the truck up to this pit, emptying stuff in, and then having to have one of us then pouring petrol over and setting light to it to have clouds of smoke to drive away the flies and to get rid of all the infectious rubbish, was with a huge stick going around, hitting hard Arab kids and men and others, trying to pull out bits of unused food and things out of this rubbish for their own safety. It was having to be really vicious to keep people away from it until we could get it all burning. I found that a very difficult thing to do. And just got that one strong picture in my mind. And another time, another strong picture where a lot of wounded had to be moved back down the lines to another hospital further down the lines, because I suppose we were overcrowded with people and the ambulances were all in use. So I expect this happened to several of us. I was there with a 3-ton truck with stretchers in, with badly wounded people, driving a long way across place where mostly not on roads, just desert and lots of bumps and holes, with the awful business of going fast because there were badly hurt people on board needing hospital treatment where we were going, or next hospital down the line, and not going too slow. And this awful business of having to choose between bumping too hard and not getting there. I found that. And getting sworn at it, naturally, which I couldn't help. I couldn't help the bumps and the fact they were on hard stretchers. There were other groups. There was an American group who had rather rather expensive looking little ambulances. I forget what group they were, American Volunteer Group. I'm just remembering that because I met one of these Americans and we stopped to have a chat. I was driving, I suppose, and not in a hurry, and he was driving his ambulance. Oh, he'd come I'd met him outside one of these mobile hospitals, and I said, are you attached to this hospital? And he said, devoted. This is purely banter on the way. And in fact, well, I'm on to a little thing. It was Henry Headley, one of the FAU people, who was my companion driving this truck. And we sort of went in pairs somewhere in North Africa there on a long convoy drive moving forward with the hospital. And we were on a road that was badly bitten into either side. It was a tarred road, but, you know, it had to be very difficult to drive on. And we passed a huge sign saying, "Danger! Both sides of the road mined." In other words, don't go off either side into to have a halt. You might get blown up. Anyway, we went on past this in silence. And about a mile later, Henry Headley said, "You know, I wonder which side mines most." Right. End of little jokes. And so it was. It's amazing to think it's all those months, because it's all bundled together. I don't have much memory of it all. Just one or two pictures of it.
Did you have any idea? You know, this great push forward,
yeah,
that you've explained. You were saying about the difficulty of orientating yourself at times. I believe you mentioned earlier. Did you have any idea where the front was or where the fighting was when you were going forward? You know, were you aware of fighting and sounds of it? Would you have been that near at times?
I think we got not nearer than 20 miles, so that you I don't remember. I mean, a whole mobile hospital is not the same as a first aid. Well, a lot of planes over, and once or twice things dropped near, but...
Was the Red Cross respected?
I think so. I mean, you occasionally heard of ambulances bombed or shot up, but I think on the whole it was. And as people came into the hospital, when I say people, wounded and sick, there was an awful lot of sick with jaundice at one time, and malaria and sandfly fever and wounded. They weren't segregated particularly. I mean, there was English and American, English and American a little bit. Come to think of it, no, America, when did America come into the war? Yes. English and German and Italian, that's what I'm trying to say, were there. And in the wards, I mean, nobody got special preferential treatment. They were wounded.
They were all together, were they, in the same war?
I'm trying to remember. Maybe they were kept separate, but certainly there was no special treatment. This is something that met all the time, that working on Red Cross work or medical work, a wounded or a sick man was a wounded or a sick man, and which was quite unexpected in some ways, and including, you know, little things. I remember going around once, or two of us, we got a kind of little extra thing going when we were quite a long time in one place in a hospital. I think it was in the corner of a town. Well, that's nothing to do with it. And going around volunteering to write letters for people and doing all this kind of thing. around a ward and then out again when we had time off from what we were doing, and meeting a padre who asked us what we were doing, and he said, "Oh my goodness, you're veritable angels in disguise." And he was like a theatrical padre. So I was sharing a tent with this man, Oliver Coburn, and we liked this very much. And we put a little notice, AID department, on the front of our tent. We kept ourselves amused by pulling our own legs and angels in disguise we were. But when we were out in desert conditions, I wrote in a letter once describing it, how you get 2 days, if you want to deal with the water in the best possible way, it was to collect 2 days' ration in a tin. This is, you know, not for drinking, but for other purposes. And then firstly, you washed yourself in it. And then for a while, for a day or two, in that dirty water, you washed out your mess tin and that kind of thing. And then when it was really quite a gooey mess, you soaked your socks in it. And by now, I wrote in the letter, it didn't much look like water. So we got to the... not far from Tunis. That's where the last place we stopped. I can't remember.
Yes. How often would you have been in one spot? You know, was it a case of sort of staying there for days? Or
oh, yes. And sometimes weeks, depending how the military things were going. And sometimes we'd be very fast forward. I think it was Tripoli that there was a kind of a race to be the first medical group to get there or something like this, so that we'd get forward. And then there would be a great rush forward of hundreds of vehicles moving forward, and then we'd stop. And then because the war moved on, I mean the front moved on more or less continuously, then it'd be quite a long wait. I think the fact that we were there the whole trip of many months, we might have been 3 or 4 weeks in some places. I think we were in Tripoli for quite a while, so you got quite dug in, shall we say.
And you would have left patients behind, presumably, as you went.
Well, they got moved back all the time by ambulance and by hospital ships that came. Where there was a port, they'd be moved out and then back by hospital ship. And some flown. I don't recall ever taking people and loading them on planes.
And setting up this hospital, you know, your big tents.
Yeah.
How quickly could you do that once you'd arrived in a place? It seems quite a complicated.
Yes,
thing.
It was pretty complicated because they, with a tent big enough for 20 beds, is a big one, a very big one. It's a marquee. And do you know, I have no recollection of setting up those tents, and we must have done them one by one, all in groups. Remember, I'm talking about the FAU, it was something like 30 FAU, 60 RAMC. I think it was about 100 people altogether, and nurses and doctors and anaesthetists. So there was, we were part of a gang, and our specific job was driving these big trucks and then helping out on the wards. So two things.
And how about sand? You know, did you have problems with sandstorm and getting into things?
Yes, all the time. Sand and insects. Although not so bad as in towns, I think. I remember thinking, if you must have a war, a desert's a good place to have it. It seems a rather strange thing if you see, say, right now in the autumn of 1990, but I do feel this rather strongly. Very few civilians got in the way, or rather got in the way where casualties as a result of that campaign. Comparatively few. I'm sure the military textbooks will say otherwise, but that's the feeling I had. So you didn't have cities bombed, not in North Africa anyway. I want to just read you, is it about a few minutes? Yeah. a part of a letter I found I wrote from somewhere in North Africa. Oh, it's May, 13th of May 1943, so that we were about furthest forward we were going to go. And it says, there's a letter to my parents. I sit on a mound on the edge of a salt flat in the setting sun. My shadow gradually lengthens across the mud. A cart has just gone by, pulled by a scurvy-looking mule. Beside the mule walked a camel that every now and then trotted faster, a few strides, as one of the cart's outsized wheels grazed its ragged haunches. And now comes another Arab on a mule, seeing two scraggy cows home. I say bonsoir, but get a sour look as a reply. Way behind me, hundreds of crickets begin their evening screaming, and now here popping along comes a decrepit old crate of a van. I've just looked round, and there behind me stands a small boy picking his nose, like that photograph of John at Shanklin. It begins to grow chilly, and the sun is just disappearing, and the mosquitoes are arriving. The distant hills are silent. Fighting in North Africa ceased yesterday. So that, yes, May, middle of May, was the end of fighting in North Africa.
What sort of wounds did you deal with? You know, can you think of any in particular? I was wondering, you know, about the tank battles, whether there were any particular wounds you sort of identify with that period. Did you have a lot of burns, for instance?
I have absolute blank in my mind about wounds, and I can only imagine. Firstly, I wasn't working in the operating theatre or the X-ray department like some people. I remember a lot of sickness. I remember looking after dysentery and jaundice and other fevers. So I'm going to make a guess is that this particular ward, or one or two, were allocated to sick rather than to surgical cases. And I think that must be it, because, I mean, I'm sure, because later on I've got lots of memories of different wounds and things. And just while I remember, obviously a lot of people died, and went off with their bodies to cemeteries or places where they were being buried. One occasion, getting quite angry with the padre who was doing it as a chore, with a cigarette in the corner of his mouth, and I didn't complain, just feeling angry with him. And another time where I had to take the body of a New Zealander, I think. It's a New Zealander. This must have been in a town, to burial, and some of his regiment were going to be there, and took him from the hospital, where he must have been excessively badly wounded and had a post-mortem, and realised, because I just took him in the truck on a stretcher, so not blankets, that he was in pieces. And I was, when I arrived, and there was a, you know, sort of the people in their best uniforms and the padre and officers for the burial, I had to get one of the officers or the padre and explain, you know, this will be awful. You can't take this corpse off the stretcher and bury it in this state. So that we unloaded a little way away, and I went away, and I assume they went off and got other blankets and were able to, because I thought if his friends were there, it would be horrible. Yeah. Anyway, we had a couple of days, 3 days, I think, off fighting had stopped, or we took in turns, and we were near the sea, and it was marvellous, and went and lay in the sun for a bit, and then came back, and other people took over, because the hospital obviously went on working. And then we had to drive all the way back to Egypt again, which took about 3 weeks, which was rather a scary journey, because my truck got worse and worse, and I was driving on no brakes eventually, and learnt how to drive on the gears and keep in convoy at least 200 or 300 yards behind people. But every now and then, when I suddenly found we were closing up, almost no brakes except the handbrake, I would drive up behind and then have to pull off the road to time to stop to get round. But eventually we got back to Egypt and set up shop somewhere near the Suez Canal, which became a kind of a base hospital near Ismailia. And that was a very different kind of life, with a kind of feeling of permanency for a bit. Although we could do things like going and swimming across the Suez Canal, which I did once, and go to concerts and all that kind of thing.
This period you had in the desert, you know, quite a very long period. How did you get on with the army, you know, the RAMC and other soldiers that you met?
Well, I don't recall getting on badly with anyone, so that this is not my memory, but what I've read in the FAU book. Apparently, relationships weren't all that good at first, and there was a lot of hassle. But I think this was amongst the people that were doing the organising rather than people who were doing the work on the ground, because we blotted our copybooks a bit as we began. We had one or two minor accidents with these trucks. I backed into something myself, I remember, which didn't endear me to the transport officer, due to inexperience of driving a 3-ton truck, unlike anything else many of us had done. So there were objections to us of being incompetent, but I understand that as the time went by, and by the time we were disbanded or that hospital we left, everything was fine, and the army officer in charge of the whole hospital was sorry to see us go. So I understand that we won our spurs slowly, but not without considerable amount of objections, and not, so we had to be better than people, rather like some minority group has to be a bit better than the people that they're with in order to be accepted.
So how long would it have been before you were sent off to Greece from...
What wasn't Greece?
To Kos, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't remember the timing exactly, but we were back in early summer in Egypt. June, July, something like that. And we were working in this hospital. Well, I was working in the hospital. Various other people were shoved around other places. And... doing various... Oh, I know, I was working as a full-time ward orderly, because I remember dealing with sulfur drugs for the first time, and how people with dysentery had to have... I forget which one it was, sulfathalamide, one of them, had to start off with 14, and then every 3 or 4 hours, 7. It was a most peculiar number, but for somebody who was really suffering from dysentery, to have to swallow 14 tablets was most appalling in my thoughts. And also we were sleeping on concrete in bell tents, and then dug out below the bell tents was a kind of a circular pit, and we were sharing these bell tents. That's where we were living, and it was fairly uncomfortable, and we were fairly not too happy with life. And then one day, after being there a few weeks, we were told that seven, eight, or nine of us, were going to be members of an experimental new thing called a